5 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show on a Friday afternoon. Happy Friday to you. Hope everybody had a real good week. Hope everyone's getting ready for a real good weekend. If you're headed down to downtown Phoenix, Chase Field for the D-backs opening day ceremonies and their home opener tonight against the Cincinnati Reds. Hope to bump into you down there as the Diamondbacks begin just a brief five-game homestand, and then they go back out on the road again. Brutal start to the schedule. For the Suns, on the other hand, Gambo, their back-to-back games against Utah and L.A., they split them. They beat the Jazz in overtime by 4 on Wednesday night, lost to the Clippers by 10 last night. Both games were nationally televised. Both games were highly competitive, very intense, playoff-type atmospheres, to be sure. For the Suns, they've got a five-game homestand that is basically their last big homestand of the year for the most part. They've got 21 games left, and while they've got some home games scattered throughout the rest of the season, these five home games they have coming up basically represents the last homestand that they have of the season, at least one of any length. They've got Washington on Saturday, Houston on Monday, Miami on Tuesday, Sacramento on Thursday, and then the Spurs next Saturday. When those five games are done, that's when the schedule gets nasty. Nasty, nasty, nasty. Milwaukee, at Philly, at Boston, at Brooklyn, at New York, home against the Clippers, home against the Jazz.
I guess. What seed do they end up?
You know what?
Right now, they're three games up on the Clippers and the Nuggets in the loss column.
Okay. Two.
So they got a three-game lead over those teams in the loss column.
Two. I think they end up with two.
Okay, I think so, too.
I think they end up with two.
I think they can hold on to two. 36, 46, 51, so 21 games left with a three-game lead. The Clippers do have an easy schedule. Easy schedule for the Clippers. So, if anything, I think the Clippers can catch them. I mean, it's possible the Nuggets do, too. But, listen, I almost feel like if you're going to get caught by one of them, I'd rather just fall to four and get caught by both of them, as long as the Jazz hold on to number one. Does it make any sense?
Because of why? Because you would...
Because of second round, I'd get the Jazz.
Oh, I see.
And let the Clippers and the Nuggets play each other.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on who you're playing in that five seed. Are you playing the... If you fall to four, that means that Utah's one, the Clippers are two.
You play Portland.
Did the Nuggets pass you? Did the Lakers pass you?
If you get passed by the Nuggets and the Clippers,
okay,
they're not going to get passed by the Lakers. The Lakers are five games behind them, and they've got guys out. They could get passed by the Clippers and the Nuggets and end up four.
So you could play the Lakers as the five, potentially.
But I think that Portland will pass the Lakers and maybe even Dallas. That's what I think. So I don't think you would play the Lakers in the first round.
It just depends on where the Lakers end up. Apparently, LeBron has been tweeting about how close they are. There was a report today that Anthony Davis might be back after this next road trip for the Lakers. So that would be about a week and a half out from now. There's been a lot of conversation about trying to avoid the Lakers in the first round. Man, I'd hate to see the Lakers in a 4-5 matchup right out of the chute for the Suns. God, that was just... But to your point, there's no... I want them to finish one or two, because when they drop into that 3-6, boy, unless you're getting Portland, you might have just a matchup from hell in the first round if you're in the 3-6 range in the Western Conference, because you might get the Nuggets. You might get the Lakers in the first round. You know, where if you stay at one or two, if you stay at two, I should say, now you're looking at that 7-8 matchup. And as long as the Lakers don't drop down there, I think you're going to have a pretty soft landing into the playoffs. But if you get into that 3 or 3-6 range, man, who knows who you're playing in the first round? It could get hairy down
there.
Yeah,
it's just, we look at this. I mean, there's still too many games to be played.
Yeah.
We'll look at this a lot closer with 5 or 6 games left, 7 games left. We'll start to really, inside of 10 maybe even, start to really, okay, if this happens, if that happens, and like, there's scenarios, but it's so too far out. Like, okay, I'd like to end up two, but if I get passed by three and I can get to four, well, then I could play, maybe Dallas in the first round, and then if I win, then I can play the Jazz. And like, there's different scenarios. But again, it's with 21 games left, it's, and you've got you're two away from the Jazz, but you're three away from the Clippers and the Nuggets. There's still just too many games to play to determine where you're going to be.
Now, if you're of the belief, and not you, John Gambadoro, but you listening right now to the Burns and Gambo show, if you're of the belief that the Suns haven't received enough national attention for what they've accomplished, or they're not getting enough credit, or there aren't enough people who are saying that they're capable of winning it all. First of all, we had Ramona Shelburne on the show earlier. And she told us that she thought that the two games they just played, the Clippers and the Jazz back-to-back, were proof positive that the Phoenix Suns are a very good basketball team and are very capable of competing at the highest level in this league. And then there's what Bill Simmons said on his podcast today. And boy, he went on a long, positive rant about the Suns and just how legit they are in the NBA's Western Conference.
I just think there's a lot of parity in the West this year. And the only way there's not going to be parity is if Davis and LeBron come back 100% and they lay the smackdown. But for now, we can't see that. We're within, you know, the playing game is May 18th. We're within 5 weeks of that, 5.5 weeks. And this is just kind of one of those seasons. It's like the bubble last year where it seemed inconceivable to a lot of you that Miami could make the finals and all of a sudden they were in the finals. I think it would be an amazing story. And I do think it's conceivable. They're a true contender. And if I had to rank the West teams, I'd still have the Lakers one. And I would have Phoenix and Denver kind of 2A and 2B. And I would have Utah 4.
Which means, as you pointed out earlier, he would have the Clippers 5. Yeah, which is...
Yeah.
They
That's the fun part, is that there probably are... If you consider the Suns a contender... The Jazz, the Suns, the Clippers, the Nuggets, you have five contenders in the West.
Yeah.
You have five contenders. How many contenders in the East? Three. Brooklyn, Philly, and Milwaukee. Three.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's eight different teams that could win. Like, I'll bet a mortgage payment on that one of those eight will win it.
I would bet one of your mortgage payments on that, too.
I would bet a mortgage payment.
I would, too. I think it's going to be one of those eight. And I don't think anybody else really belongs in the club when we're talking about...
But that's still a lot more than anything we've had previously.
Oh.
You could pick three teams, maybe four, and be guaranteed that one of them were going to win it every single year.
Oh, whoa, wait a minute. Hold on. Okay. This is interesting. I don't know if this is breaking news worthy, but I'm going to go ahead and bring this up since we're talking about the Suns. Mark Stein just tweeted out a moment ago, the LA Clippers have announced they have lost Patrick Beverley for 3 to 4 weeks with a fractured bone in his left hand.
Surgery on his left hand. He'll miss a little. Now, that couldn't have been because he elbowed Booker with his right elbow, right?
When he jabbed at Chris Paul, I'm trying to picture the play in my mind's eye. Was it his left or was it his right?
It was his right.
Was it his right? Okay, so it was his right hand and arm that he kind of used to shove Chris Paul when he was in the air. So it couldn't have been on that play. So the Clippers just lost maybe not one of their top two pieces, but they just lost a big piece for basically the rest of the regular season. That's...
Yeah.
Gonna help the Suns' cause. There is no other way to look at it. That's gonna help. How much it helps, I don't know. That's gonna help.
Is it really that big of a deal?
He's...
I mean, the guy is averaging 8 points and 2 assists.
He is like their spiritual kind of energy go-to leader guy. I know they got Rajon Rondo because they needed more point guard play, and they needed somebody else to kind of handle that with Pat Bev's injuries. He's not a big scorer, but he's... one of those emotional heartbeat kind of guys that I think they're going to miss in some of those games. Gamble, I don't know if you agree or not. It's not losing Paul George and it's not losing Kawhi Leonard. And maybe there'd be another player or two on that team that they wouldn't want to lose more. I think Pat Bev is a fairly important part on that roster that they're going to be without for the next three
to
4 weeks.
Yeah, remember, when you shorten the bench, when you shorten your roster, when you shorten it in the playoffs, you're down to nine guys. Maybe some games eight, some games 10, but usually like nine guys. He's one of your rotation guys. So anytime you lose a rotation guy like that, you're losing a key piece. So I think, I don't think that this, all of a sudden that the odds are going to change dramatically because Patrick Beverley's, not playing or he's going to be out. But he's a guy that you could look in the playoffs to consistently give you 15 to 20 minutes and give you some toughness. And not having him, I think, could be a blow to him. He's a tough defensive player. It's again, he's not the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth best player, but he's a key rotational piece for them.
Yeah. Starting next Monday, we're giving you the chance every weekday to win $500. Text the word bonus to 620-620 to register. Listen for your name at 7:35 in the morning, 1:35 in the afternoon, or 3:35 in the afternoon for your chance at the Arizona Sports Signing Bonus. This is going to be a lot of fun, and we're looking forward to giving out some money. Text the word bonus, B-O-N-U-S, to 620-620. When we come back, as of right now, the Cardinals have a running back room that was found in the bargain bin for the most part. And if it's successful, and this is truly a copycat league, will the NFL copy the Arizona Cardinals when it comes to the running back spot? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, Gambo, if you would, catch everybody up on the running back market for the Arizona Cardinals. With the draft still a few weeks away, it was one of those positions they never really got around to addressing in free agency. Doesn't appear as if they're going to sign anybody now before the draft. They've kind of shifted their attention. Most teams have shifted their attention. Sort of the latest when it comes to the running back situation at this point.
You know, Giovanni Bernard got released, and I don't really have an update on him yet. You know, I've said that the one running back, I think, the only running back that I know there's any interest in at all right now would be James Conner, the former Steeler. So he's a free agent, and you know, that's the one guy I could say, okay, I think. Now, they had interest in Mike Davis, but, you know, he went to Atlanta, but they had interest in him. James kind of like, you know, I don't, you know, Le'Veon Bell, no. Adrian Peterson, no. Duke Johnson, no. Todd Gurley, no. I think that the only one that I could really pinpoint interest in would be James Conner. But that's, you know, it would have to get him on a minimum, right? They're not spending money outside a minimum right now. I mean, they've got to save money for the injured reserve and the draft pick, so they don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I think that if they're going to get somebody, I like James Conner. I don't have an update on Giovanni Bernard. Maybe, maybe not. But Conner's a guy that makes a lot of sense. He's kind of that bruising, tough back that you'd be looking for.
Yeah, Conner, if you're looking for a thunder and lightning kind of guy, Conner makes, I think, a little more sense than Bernard. Just Bernard is kind of almost a carbon copy of Chase Edmonds in terms of height and kind of what he's good at. Giovanni Bernard's yards per carry the last couple of years have been among the worst in the NFL among running backs with enough, you know, carries to qualify. So Bernard would be, if you want to replace Edmonds with a guy who's like Edmonds, Bernard might make some sense. If you're looking to bring somebody in who's a bruiser, that's not really Giovanni Bernard. So it would just be kind of a question of what exactly they're looking for at their running back. And I don't think, and I know you've been saying this for a couple of weeks now, doesn't really sound like they're going to do anything now until after the draft anyway, because the compensation pick formula, they sign somebody now, they might mess with that a little bit. If they wait until after the draft, those players don't count towards the comp pick formula. And as it stands right now, the Cardinals are scheduled, they could get up to 3 extra picks this time a year from now. So I don't think they're going to do anything between that. They're going to wait until after the draft because they don't want to mess with that if they possibly can. But Kyle Odegaard over at AZ Cardinals, the reason I ask you about the running backs, he wrote a really kind of thought-provoking story on their website today about how the Cardinals, as it stands right now, and I know this can change if they go sign a veteran, the team right now currently is the lowest in the NFL in running back spending. $3.8 million in total cap money. Average per player is only about $820,000 in salary per player. And Kyle kind of wonders, if the Cardinals can make that work, is that a blueprint for other teams to realize we don't need to spend a lot of money on our running backs to survive, right?
Well, I compared it to the Diamondbacks in the bullpen. We're not going to spend a lot of money on the bullpen.
That's a good comp. That's a really good comp.
We're just not going to spend a lot of money on the bullpen.
It has never been Mike Hazen's belief to spend a lot of money on the bullpen.
Nope, change it every year. Every year, change it. I mean, you guys are here today and they're gone tomorrow. I mean, how many closers can you name from the Diamondbacks? Every year, it's a different closer. Every year. From Fernando Rodney to Brad Boxberger. I mean, every year, it's a different guy. So I think that's just the way you got to look at it, is that the Cardinals may be looking at that running back position and say, you know what, we just don't think it's worth it to spend $8, $9, $10 million on a running back. There's enough of them out there that you could get that are veterans that you could get on the cheap. And if you have a young guy that you like and you play him and you combine the two, I think you'll be all right. Now, they can always draft. Look, I would not rule out either of the top two running backs as a pick for the Cardinals. I just, because they're going to say, if you're sitting there at 16 and the top two corners are gone and the tight end's gone, and you know your best offensive linemen you like are gone, and the top three wide receivers are gone, would I rule out them taking a running back there? Nope. I wouldn't rule them taking, you know, whether it's Travis Etienne or Najee Harris. I'm not ruling that out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not. I mean, I think if the Vera Tucker kid from USC is there, he'd be an intriguing pick for them at 16. I do think that that could be a guy that they look at 16 if a lot of the other positions are gone. But as far as the running back's concerned, yeah, there's no way right now that I would rule out Travis Etienne and Najee Harris.
It's interesting that you say that, because I look at it. I think there are two ways to look at drafting a running back at number 16 for the Cardinals. Number one, if you're in win-now mode, and the Cardinals do appear to be in win-now mode, those are very talented running backs who can help you win right now. They're plug-and-play guys. You can put them in there. They're both going to fit very, very well with what you do schematically. I think especially Etienne, and he's said as much. The problem with it, and so if you're in win-now mode and you're deciding you're going for it now, that's fine. Draft a running back in the first round. The problem with it is the chances that you sign either one of those guys to a second contract 4 years from now, 5 years from now, that's kind of not the point of the first round of the draft, right? You're trying to find a player who will be a cornerstone guy for you for the next 8, 9, 10 years,
but
if you can get away with it.
How often does that happen? I mean, that's great, right? But how often does that happen where you get that guy?
Not often enough around here, I'll tell you that. Yeah. I mean, I think it happens more often with other teams. It doesn't happen very often around here.
I mean, Patrick Peterson was one of those guys. DJ Humphreys was one of those guys. Larry Fitzgerald was one of those guys. You know, so I maybe at the running backs. I don't think at the running back spot you want a running back for 9 years.
No, that's my point.
You drafted a running back for 3 or 4, you know.
And that's my point. That might be why you don't. Because if you're weighing between a help you now running back at 16 or a cornerback who can be potentially your cornerstone guy for the next 8 years, that's the philosophy that you kind of have to weigh. Are we going for it now, or are we looking for a long-term answer to one of the premium positions in the NFL, cornerback? And that's going to be the tough one when it comes to that, because Travis Etienne at number 16, that dude will help you win right now. Right now, he makes you a better football team and a better offense. I just don't know if you can count on signing him to a second contract. And I know Steve Keim, particularly as a general manager, has struggled to draft guys in the first round that have been warranting a second contract, right? I mean, there just haven't been very many at all. DJ Humphreys was one. Buddha in the second was another. But other than that, there just aren't a ton of second contract guys that Steve Keim has been able to draft. So I don't know. I don't know what they would do if they're presented with that situation. It's an interesting question you ask.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're trying to win now. You are trying to win now. If you see a running back that can help you win now over a guy that, you know, you don't have rated as high, you know, then I think you'll do that. Again, my feeling is that if J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain are off the board, I don't know that they're going corner at 16. I doubt it. I don't know for sure, but I doubt it. I would not be surprised if they went, you know, with an offensive lineman or a running back or a wide receiver if those two guys are off the board.
So not Caleb Farley, but J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain. If those two guys are off the board, you'd be surprised if they went cornerback at number 16. You're not ruling it out, but you say you'd be surprised. Okay.
Yes.
That's interesting. A lot of questions about whether the Suns have the right makeup to go on a lengthy playoff run. How did the young guys respond during these playoff-like games these last two nights? Because that might have gone a long way in telling us how ready the Suns are to make a run. And we'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Burns and Gambo on this Friday afternoon, 5:30 in the afternoon. D-backs baseball coming up. Sarah just mentioned it a second ago, about an hour from right now. Suns basketball, they're back at it tomorrow when they host the Washington Wizards at Phoenix Suns Arena. A 5-game homestand for the Suns that basically covers all of next week. And then after that, a brutal stretch of games in which, well, you thought the Suns were being tested with playoff intensity type basketball on back-to-back games. They play basically 7 straight games against some of the very best teams in the Eastern Conference, and then finish that with another stretch match against Utah and the LA Clippers on the back end of that. They're not back-to-back on back-to-back nights. There's an off night in there.
Yeah, let's embrace it.
I mean, totally.
Honestly, let's embrace
Absolutely.
It. I mean, meaningful basketball games. Instead of like, look, let's call it like it is. Usually at this point in the season, we're looking at the mock drafts.
Oh,
we are.
Well, yeah.
Mock drafts. Who could the Suns get with their go through the? How many times this year have you pressed that button on Tankathon?
Not one.
Not
it's
once.
So funny you guys mentioned that. There was an article on TheRinger.com today.
Yeah.
And I almost out of instinct, I almost went and clicked on it. And the headline is The Ringer's NBA Playoff and Lottery Odds Machine. And I was like, oh, lottery odds. That's
not
the
once.
That's the Suns. Oh, wait.
Remember, we've got to rethink
the way we go about business now.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many times did we sit there and let's play the lottery until we have the Suns with the number one pick? And we do it. Oh, I got them seventh. Oh, I got them sixth. I got them third. I got them second. Like, I mean, it was so stupid. I mean, it was so dumb. I mean, it was just like, that was what we had.
That's all we had.
That's all we had.
That's all we had to keep us warm on
a stupid simulator.
April night, we were
going to dictate where they were going to pick,
I know, like we had any say over that. The stretch that I'm talking about, by the way, is it starts on April 19th, Monday, at Milwaukee, at Philly, and there's a day off between those games. You've got Philly and Boston on back-to-back nights, so no off day between those games. And then you've got Brooklyn and New York. These are all on the road, by the way, with no off day in between those games. And then you come home, you play the Clippers, off day, and then you play the Utah Jazz also at home. That's a 7-game stretch. And I'm with you. I'm not afraid of it. I'm not nervous about it. After the last couple of days, watching how the Suns competed, didn't back down, were not intimidated by the Utah Jazz or the LA Clippers, even in a 10-point loss last night, I say let's see where this team is a couple of weeks from now when they play those 7 consecutive games against really good basketball teams and see how they do, because I'm so encouraged about how they responded these last 2 days. I thought they played really well.
I just looked at the Clipper matchup because I'm intrigued by the Clippers, okay? Because I think that's a tough matchup for Phoenix. That's the first game home after being away for 5 road games. So they're going to leave on April 18th, and they're not going to come back until April 27th. And then they play the Clippers on the 28th. Not like that's always the toughest game, is that first game back.
Yes.
You go through a long road trip, you're gone for 10 days, you come back, and that first game is, coaches always hate that first game. Now, the Clippers will be on a road trip. They'll be that Friday. They'll be in Houston. That Monday they'll be in New Orleans, and then Wednesday they'll be in Phoenix. So they've got a 3-game road trip, but there's a day off. They get Friday, then they get 2 days off. Then they play Monday against New Orleans, then they get a day off, and then they play Phoenix. You're going to see in this schedule, you're going to see a lot of possible playoff matchups.
Oh yeah.
In this schedule. I mean, you're going to see the Lakers. You're going to see the Clippers. You're going to see some of these teams that you could end up playing. So, you're going to see Portland. You're going to see the Lakers. You're going to see the Jazz. You're going to see the Clippers. So you're going to see a few teams that you may end up playing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then all those Eastern Conference teams as well. I liked what our friends over at Bright Side of the Sun did. And to be honest with you, I wish I had thought of this because I thought this was a really good way of looking at it. One of the biggest questions about the Suns was how the young guys were going to handle playoff-type basketball. And I don't think I really had any doubts about it. I don't think you had any real doubts about it either. But given that, Chris Paul's got this wealth of experience, Jay Crowder's got this wealth of experience, there isn't a lot of experience on the Suns roster when it comes to dealing with games like we've seen the last 2 nights. And Brightside basically gave, for lack of a better way of putting it, kind of a report card on how some of the young guys did in these playoff-type games the last 2 nights. For example, Mikal Bridges, up and down against Utah and the Clippers. He struggled against Utah, foul trouble, but against the Clippers he responded well. He was one of the few guys who could actually hit a 3-pointer last night for the Suns. Cameron Johnson, up and down, stepped up against the Jazz. Against the Clippers, you didn't really notice him much. He didn't do a whole lot. Devin Booker, they had his very good. He had a rough first quarter against Utah, but he kind of settled down after that. He was huge in overtime. And last night, even though he didn't hit a 3, God, he got to the line a lot. He played very aggressively, and they really focused their defense on him. But what I liked, what I loved, DeAndre Ayton, all caps, the grade they gave him, big time. That's all it says, big time, all caps. Game he had against Utah, game he had against Clippers, very good and very much what they need from him in games like this moving forward.
And listen, I don't know what happened last night, but you go look at that third quarter. D.A. basket from Book, D.A. from McHale, D.A. dunk from Book, D.A. from Book, D.A. off a putback. I mean, you go look at that third quarter. I mean, he scored points 62 and 63, 64 and 65, 66 and 67, 68 and 69, 72 and 73. He was killing them. They had no answer for him. And then they stopped. They completely stopped going to him. I think what happens is when they get down by 8, 9, 10, they don't want to, they want to shoot threes, and they don't want to, you know, pound it inside. You go look at that stretch in the third quarter last night. It was all DeAndre Ayton, and the Clippers couldn't do anything to stop him. But they didn't, the Suns went away from that. The Suns did. They stopped going to him. I mean, he was having a good game, and they completely stopped. I think it's because they got down a little bit. But, I mean, you were saying what the plus-minus is. Like, he still had one of the best plus-minuses on the team when he was on the court,
right? They were +2 with him on the floor. They were -12 with him off.
Yep.
Yeah, they were against Utah. They were +15 with him on. And keep in mind, that's not just an offensive number. And I still think, and I think you think this too, the offensive numbers are fine. I'm still much more interested in DeAndre Ayton, the defender. DeAndre Ayton, the anchor of what they're doing down low to help kind of guide this defense that has been so good.
It's what they need.
Yeah,
that's what they need.
It's the most important thing. And I mean, this team offensively is going to still center around Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And that's just the way it's going to be. Although I do agree with you last night. I do think they kind of forgot about Ayton and maybe should have continued to try to feed Ayton last night. But I always look at his defensive contributions more. But more than anything, the fact that he didn't wilt in these games, you know?
Not at all.
That he didn't melt in the big moment that
he excelled.
He excelled. That is such a good sign for him and them moving forward, because that's the version of him they need if they're going to make a run in these playoffs. Right there, what you've seen these last two games.
Yeah, and you know how I feel, right? I mean, I do take a bigger picture look with him. I know we want instant results, and I get it. I mean, I totally get it, because the Suns are good. But, man, he's going to be – how much better is he going to be next year? How much better he's going to be when he's 24? How about 25? How about a 26? Like he is a really good basketball player now at 22. Can you imagine what he's going to be at 25 or 26 years old? And we're seeing more signs now of him being able to dominate. We're seeing more of those signs. And against good teams and in big situations. And that's what you wanted.
That's what you wanted. For the first time this season, Cole Calhoun, healthy, in the Diamondbacks lineup. And for the first time this season, the D-backs are home. Can that help the offense get over their slow start to this year? We'll talk about that coming up right here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the D-backs as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the Bacon Jam Cheeseburger for a limited time only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com.
And a happy opening day to all the sports fans out there, all the baseball fans out there. It is opening day for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Yeah, they had their opener a week ago against San Diego, but the home opener, opening day, flyovers, and 20,000 fans in the stadium after what we saw last year in the pandemic with nobody in the stadium. It's going to feel, it won't be a full house. It's not going to be 48,000, obviously, but it is going to feel a whole lot closer to normal. And there's always that magical thing about opening day, no matter how bad your team is expected to be and maybe how bad of a start they're off to, as the Diamondbacks are so far. There is always that special feeling on opening day of being able to watch a little baseball. It's a special day for me. It is for you, too. And I know we're all looking looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
For sure.
My wife and kids are there right now. So opening day is the best. I mean, I love it. So it is. It's just a great day. Just a baseball fan, and it's your team, and it's their home, and you know, they get to go out there and play their first game in their home stadium. It's awesome.
So they open up a 3-game series against the Reds, and then a quick 2-game series against the A's, and then it's right back on the road for Torey Lovello and the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are off to a 2-5 start so far on the year. We'll talk. There's a lot of things making news around the team, but let's first talk about the pitching matchup for tonight's game, and it is brought to you by the Berg Simpson Law Firm. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to the Berg Simpson Law Firm. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's BURGSimpson.com. Good lawyers, changing lives. Taylor Widener getting his second start of his major league career and of the season for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's been the only decent starter so far for Arizona. He's 1-0 with an ERA of 0 after those 6 scoreless innings he put up against San Diego. Tyler Molly gets the start for Cincinnati. 1-0, 3.60 ERA for the 5-1 Cincinnati Reds. Gambo.
Yeah, Molly's good. I mean, he beat the Cardinals on Saturday. Average fastball was 95.1 mile per hour. He struck out 9 Cardinals. The only guy he had a hard time with was Paul DeJong. You know, he had 2 home runs off of him, DeJong did. But Tyler Molly's a good, you know, good pitcher with a good fastball. So he, you know, he's a guy that's coming off of a good game against the Cardinals and looking to build on that. And the Reds just off to their best start since 2016. I mean, 5-1 and off to their best start in 5 years.
Yeah, the Reds leading the National League in homers, RBIs, batting average, slugging percentage, OPS. They're second in hits and triples and on-base percentage. Nick Castellanos off to a tremendous start. They've got Tyler Naquin off to a tremendous start. There wasn't a ton of expectations about the Reds this year. So this hot start has kind of caught their fan base a little bit by surprise, especially since they weren't great in the Cactus League.
Worst record.
Yeah, but they're off to a really good start so far, right?
Yeah, they had the worst record of anybody in the Cactus League or the Grapefruit League. I mean, they just, you know, they were terrible. So I don't think, you know, there was a lot of expectations with the Reds. But then you go ahead and you know they were 27th in runs last year, and now, I mean, they're just scoring a lot of runs. So they're scoring a lot of runs, and you know, off to a good side. And starting pitching has been really good for them too, which is another thing to look at. Like, the starting pitching has been great. I mean, they're starting pitching, giving up 5 runs in 28 innings. So they're getting, but they were 7-19 in spring training. Wow. 7-19. I mean, that was the worst out of any team in Major League Baseball. Nobody was as bad as them. But wins and losses doesn't matter. But even with that being said, they had the worst record of anybody.
They've played 6 games so far. They scored double digits in runs in half of the games that they've played. 12 runs against the Cardinals, 14 against the Pirates, and then 11 against the Pirates in their last time out, their last game out. So for Taylor Widener, tough matchup tonight. But if he, you know, and this is the game of adjustments. It kind of starts tonight. He had his first start last weekend. The league got a look at him as a starting pitcher. Let's see what adjustments are made, because outside of him, boy, it's been a real struggle for the Diamondbacks starting rotation the first time and a half through that rotation. They've all struggled outside of Taylor Widener.
Yeah, you know, you hope getting, you know, you hope the offense will click, but, you know, more importantly, like, you're not going to win games if the starting pitching, you know, flounders like this. I mean, it's just, you know, Bumgarner's had 2 starts and he hasn't been good. Luke Weaver was decent. I mean, he was decent. Looking forward to his.
I thought for Chase Field, that actually was a pretty decent start for Luke Weaver. That's not bad.
I agree. I thought that was pretty good, too. So, you know, as you go forward, you hope that Widener can be good. You'll be a Gallon back. There's hope, right? The hope is that Widener's legit and that he's real, that Gallon is going to come back and be great, and that Weaver could be good. So there's hope with those 3 guys. Whether there's hope with Madison Bumgarner or not, I don't know. I mean, I don't have much hope, but, you know, it seems like he can't be any worse, so it has to get better. It can't get worse.
Well, guys are starting to come back. Zach Gallen threw 67 pitches last night in a camp game at Salt River Fields. He threw a curveball in every single inning he threw, and he reported no discomfort, so that's a good start. Maybe he's closer to coming back. Cole Calhoun is back. Torey Lovello today on why they activated their right fielder when they did and why he's in the lineup tonight.
We knew that he was getting very, very close. My conversations with him throughout the course of the past 10 days have told me that as well. And we were going to put him in a situation to go out there and be healthy and be successful. And I think the target day was today. He worked his butt off to make today happen. And he told us he was ready. The medical team signed off on it. So it got to that point where we were super excited about putting him in there. And we'll wait and see how it goes tonight.
Batting second tonight for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, and you know, he provides some pop, you know, and that's what you need. He provides some pop. He drives in runs. He hits home runs. He's not, like we've always said, he's not the highest average guy, but he is a guy that, you know, can give you that threat of the long ball. He's the guy that can hit that two-run home run. And they're going to need him with Cattell out for a little bit now, right? They're going to need him to drive in some runs and pick up that slack because Cattell was off to such a great start.
Torrey was even asked about the pressure on Cole Calhoun to replace Cattell's production. Here's what he said.
It's going to be a welcome sight to see him run out there and trot out to right field and then get four or five at-bats because he's just a quality baseball player who does quality things at all times. Also, he's very impactful inside of the clubhouse. He's one of our leaders inside of this clubhouse, and he gets everybody's thoughts redirected when they need to be redirected. And well, I can't say how much we've missed him up to this point, but I'm sure you can imagine. And you know, with one player going out, another coming in, it kind of offsets a little bit of the frustration. But we want everybody healthy. And as we get these pieces back, hopefully day by day, and then obviously week by week, we'll start playing our best baseball. So, Cole's a special player, but he's a special teammate. And that's what I'm excited to see play out every single day.
And then one other quick note about the news coming from the Diamondbacks. They didn't really have a starter for tomorrow night with Caleb Smith being demoted to the bullpen. Riley Smith is going to get the start tomorrow for the Arizona Diamondbacks as they kind of reshuffle their rotation with the demotion of Caleb Smith down to the bullpen.
Yeah, and that's the first of many guys that we're going to see get opportunities to pitch for this team this year. I mean, it is... You know, they're going to go through a lot of starters and give guys opportunities. And again, when guys falter, somebody else will get a chance.
All right. It's time for the MLB standings brought to you by PNC Bank, financial tools and tech to help make things easier. The LA Dodgers right now leading the National League West with a 6-2 record. They've already won today in their home opener. They handed out their World Series rings. They're about the size of a baseball if you look at all the diamonds that are on the ring. Looked very nice. The San Francisco, if you're a Dodgers fan and you're into that kind of thing, that is. The Giants are 4-3. The Padres are 4-3. The Rockies at 3-5. And the Arizona Diamondbacks bringing up the rear going into their home opener tonight with a 2-5 record in the National League West. In the meantime, some keys to tonight's game.
Listen, man, I need you to be the key master.
I am the key master.
D-backs keys to the game, brought to you by Sand Chevrolet. Sands makes it easy. Shop how and where you want. Online in the new Sand Showroom. Find new roads at sandchevrolet.com.
You got a key or two for me tonight, Gambo?
I love this one, yeah. It's the bottom of the Reds lineup. Tyler Naquin, Jonathan India, and Tucker Barnhart have been killing it. India's batting .476 with 10 RBIs. Tyler Naquin's got 4 home runs. He's batting .316. And Barnhart's hitting .385. The bottom of the Reds lineup has been torching teams. So after you get through the, you know, first 4 or 5, you think, okay, might have a break with the bottom of the lineup. No, you don't. The Reds, you know, the Reds, their 6, 7, and 8 hitters have been carrying this team quite a bit. You got to find a way to get those guys out.
That is a good, good key right there. There's no doubt about that. So D-backs baseball coming up next. Diamondbacks pregame coverage and then the game. 6:40 first pitch here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. That's going to do it for us. Have a good weekend, everybody. We will see you Monday at straight up 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.